views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good morning. It is 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. My name is Angel Fall. Thanks for listening to Black Talk Radio. This program is called Victims to Victorious. Again, I'm Angel Fall. Each and every week, we take a look at gun violence in America and how it can be cured, because after all, it is a disease. Today's show, we're going to take a look at community-based interventions. Community-based interventions. And for those of you who are listening for the very first time, I'm going to start again with a definition of public health. The epidemiologist that first got me interested in curing gun violence using public health models, and some statistics and some successes. And of course, successes are going to be programs that reduce the morbidity and mortality, meaning the number of gunshot wounds and the number of people who die from those wounds in certain large cities in America. Lisa Rose Rodriguez is a trained epidemiologist. She got a training at the University of Connecticut Health Center in Farmington, Connecticut. And in 2017, she posted an article on LinkedIn. There are two articles on the reference today. And for those of you who are academics, these are not peer-reviewed articles. These are articles that are published on LinkedIn. So the first article is called Chicago Blue Prohibition Era, Bottling Homicides in 2017. She begins by listing some of the victims in that year: Antoine Watkins, Lavelle Morgan, Quentin Tainton. And she explains that they have all been victims of homicide. And often in the dialogue of the urban gun violence, the color, the being of black and the being of brown in these urban cities causes news media to negate their being victims or their victimhood. So I'm going to explain a little bit about what that article does. I'm going to read from it. She says, in this profession, we study the patterns of diseases in populations. Violence is a disease. That means it has predictable rates within populations. The first definition of an outbreak is how many of the cases are new compared to what normally occurs in this population. Very often, location defines the frequency of the disease prevalence or pattern, you know, or the presence in this population. I'll read that again. Very often, location defines the frequency of the disease prevalence or pattern of its presence in this population. How many people, she asked in this article, in the mainstream believe the African-American population should accept this pattern? Who is willing to break it? The label, she's referring to their death and the trend of violence as prohibition. And, of course, you remember Al Capone, the various other gangsters who profited off of prohibition because alcohol was illegal. So the metaphor here is who was willing to break it. The label of each young man's life got printed, attached to a bottle where the contents have never fully been aged. And you can read more about that article if you look up Lisa Rose Rodriguez on LinkedIn. Now, on her page, she also has another article that showcases some of the public health principles. And today we will be starting with a looking at the city of Chicago, it's not only in the news, but they've also had some successes with community-based prevention. And one of those programs is called Cure Violence. So let's talk a little bit more about how violence is cured. And for that, you have to understand how it's defined as a disease and what are some of the general principles of public health that will help the listener who's not trained in that to understand it. And then we're going to talk about the community-based project Cure Violence in Chicago. I'm actually broadcasting right now from Cleveland. I've been broadcasting here since the beginning of the show. And Cleveland, of course, is the city that was famous by the terrible killing of the 12-year-old boy, Tamir Rice. So in reducing gun violence, morbidity, and mortality, which is also an article she published on LinkedIn. Again, if you are an academic, I understand that these are not peer-reviewed articles on LinkedIn. And so I want the academics to keep in mind. Nonetheless, they're very accessible. So if you are listening, you're at your computer, you can type in reducing gun violence, morbidity, and mortality in African-American males by applying interpersonal communication skills. Much of the rhetoric right now is associated with gun violence is talking about background checks. Believe it or not, a lot of places you don't really have to have a permit, for instance, to own a gun. Carrying in public, open carrying, those are a lot of the policy-based discussions. So in the motto of Lisa Rose Rodriguez and other people, you're taking a look at individuals in the community, and they themselves come up with solutions. Now, Lisa's actually an advocate of harm reduction model. So in the second article she has on LinkedIn, she explains what harm reduction is. You just tuned in. We are Victims to Victorious, and I'm Angel Fall, broadcasting on the platform of Black Talk Radio. Harm reduction, and I'm reading from her article, harm reduction programs identify people at risk for harm, and then those at risk are taught to negate their own risk to improve health care outcomes. So in this method, an assessment will be given to self-referred black and brown men of color in large urban areas with elevated homicide rates or death. Those who self-refer will get counseling surrounding using violence to solve interpersonal conflicts. And the people we're going to look at, the work we're going to look at today of Cure Violence, that's actually what they do. And they also use a word called violence interruption. That's violence interruption. So in a program that reduces it based on individual choices and community interventions, Lisa Rose Rodriguez proposes that partners in this method will help monitor arrests and high school graduation rates through already established mentoring programs in cities that are plagued with gun violence. And she mentions Atlanta and Chicago. So this article is tended towards academics, but for grassroots people who want to understand the public health model, I'm trying to bridge the gap. So men at risk can be identified as victims of felony assaults in clinics and emergency room victims. People who study violence, of course, know that prior association with violence, especially if you are the perpetrator, predicts future application of violence. Prior gun possession also is the predictor of actually whether or not the person who's convicted of the possession of an illegal possession of a gun will use it in a felony assault or felony homicide. Also, men who have been stabbed or shot will be identified as being at risk for homicide. So if you want to know more about her harm reduction method, you can email Lisa Rose Rodriguez at lrodriguez_mph@yahoo.com. That's lrodriguez_mph@yahoo.com. So in her first article about Chicago, She's referencing the horrendous numbers that we hear about in the urban Chicago area. So those of you who are on the computer, if you can take a minute, go to cureviolence.org. And cureviolence.org is a program that is a community-based intervention. It's not outside people telling people what to do, how to gather data, et cetera. I'm going to explain it for the listening. Again, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Victims to Victoria on Black Talk Radio. So there are five required components of a Cure Violence project. And this one is in Chicago. It's also known as Ceasefire. It's also known as Ceasefire Chicago. So the first thing about a community-based intervention program is that you want to detect potentially violent events and interrupt them to prevent violence through trained credible messengers. I'm going to define credible messengers in a moment. So interrupting a cycle here. We have seen it in other public health models. We've seen it in infectious disease models. When you see hand-washing signs in the bathroom, your washing of the hands for the number of seconds and drying helps interrupt the transmission of bacteria and viruses. So the number one component in a cure violence program is that you detect potentially violent events and interrupt them to prevent violence through trained, credible messengers. And there's some discussion in the public health field about who is a trained, credible messenger. And in research models, people who do outreach are most successful conveying their messages to people who mirror them in demographics. So here's a little bit about how postulate one works. You identify situations that are likely to result in violent acts, such as a prior shooting. And we mentioned that earlier, looking at the article on LinkedIn, the two articles on LinkedIn by epidemiologist Lisa Rose Rodriguez. Identify situations that are likely to result in violent acts, such as prior shooting, group conflict, charity disputes, formation of a new group, major arrests, anniversaries, release of key individuals from incarceration. These are, you know, slightly veiled references to gangbangers. Ongoing conflicts by recruiting, selecting, training, and supporting those that have the greatest access and trust to the highest and very highest risk. And that's one of the descriptions from the website, cureviolence.org. So we're amplifying the very first component. And I was reading number two under, or the subheading under the first title, detect potentially violent events and interrupt them to prevent violence through trained credible messengers. On cureviolence.org, the next postulate we have, and they call it component, number two, provide ongoing behavior change and support to the highest risk individuals through trained credible messengers. So the trained credible messengers are workers from the community, sometimes other stakeholders, but each worker has a caseload of highest and very highest risk participants. Again, I'm reading one of the descriptions of how postulate or component number two works. For each participant, the worker conducts an assessment and develops a risk reduction plan for reducing the participant's risk and shifting their behavior. And this is very similar to what we heard in the article about reducing gunshot wound victim morbidity mortality. Workers assist participants, again, I'm reading from the site, cureviolence.org. Workers assist participants in dealing with a number of issues, such as education, employment, criminal justice, mental health, alcohol, drugs, trauma, reentry, and related life skills through the utilization of existing social services. So in preparing for the show, I saw that the outreach workers are able to make referrals in these programs. And we're talking about we're at the cureviolence.org site, the Chicago model. This model has also been implemented in New York City as well as Baltimore. And in Baltimore, that would be the work of Johns Hopkins School of Public Health one of the people who spearheaded the project is Dr. Shani Buggs, B-U-G-G-S. She's currently a postdoc fellow at the University of California, Davis. So right now we're back at the Chicago site. And for those of you who are listening, we know that this model has been used in New York City and Baltimore. So recapping, component number two of the CureViolence.org components for your program, your community-based program, to be functional and successful. Provide ongoing behavior change and support to the highest risk individuals through credible messengers. Component number three, change community norms that allow, encourage, and exasperate violence in chronically violent neighborhoods to healthy norms that reject the use of violence. So one of the discussions around here is how people perceive violence, that there's an expectation of being shot. We know that 72% of everyone in America actually does know someone who's been shot. So in this model, CureViolence.org in Chicago, they actually do door-to-door canvassing. The program staff, these are the, including the program, the credible messengers, host activities in the area at times during late hours even to spread messages about the rejection of using violence. And in the article, Reducing Gun Morbidity and Mortality, Lisa Rose Rodriguez discusses interpersonal conflict resolution. If you live in Chicago, Atlanta, Detroit, and you are listening and you are a young man, chances are you know someone who died from a dispute with an acquaintance or a friend. So the people who want to make these projects work are offering the participants a way of solving a conflict that does include pulling out a 9mm that is cocked, to use the street language. Number four, we're going through all five of them. If you just tuned in, my name is Angel Fall, and we're discussing a program that has gotten good results. The pilot program was conducted in three areas that I know of so far in the United States: New York City, Chicago, and Baltimore. And we are looking at the work that was done in Chicago, but I'm letting the listeners understand what it means. We all have heard about the background check. We have all heard about waiting periods. We all have heard about getting guns out of the mentally ill. But in these large cities where urban violence is concentrated, they're looking at the neighborhoods and the people who are most likely to be victims or victimizers. And there are five required criteria to implement a cure violence model. So if you're a grassroots person, if you know someone who got shot and you want to do things differently, listen to what I'm saying here on Black Talk Radio. And also, go to your computer and look up cureviolence.org. We're discussing the implementation of the model in the city of Chicago. And to date, or I would say last year, there were 47,220 gun incidents. Not all of them end up in more mortality, and I have defined it before. So in other words, of all the 47,220 gun incidents, everyone who gets shot does not die. And that is also problematic in terms of the public health model, because you're treating people whose bodies may never be the same. Gunshot wounds to the eye can make someone blind or cause neurological damage. Gunshot wounds to the spine cause crippling. I think if you remember watching the very first Boys in the Hood with Morris Chestnut, one of the actors is in the wheelchair when it begins. So morbidity is not to be pushed aside because it's costly. Rehab, surgery, the demoralization that people feel when they're no longer walking. And that's all part of the social cost. So we've read through one, two, and three. Now we're at the fourth component that makes your Cure Violence Project makes it agree with the established model. Number four, continually analyze data to ensure proper implementation and identify changes in violence patterns and levels. So So this sounds like, oh, everyone who has to have a PhD to do this part. Not really. The outreach workers can gather the data, and the agency can monitor changes in the community by looking at public information. For instance, police reports are public. So the monitoring of how things are changing or if things are changing. Here's a little blurb that amplifies number four in the cure violence model. I'm reading from the site. Supervisors and workers conduct an analysis of every shooting that occurs in or near their target area to determine the cause. The necessary response to prevent a retaliatory act of violence, a community response, the reason the shooting was not prevented, and what the program site can improve to prevent shootings in the future. So these workers are actually certified by the Cure Violence site, and in preparing for the show, I came across information that said that the outreach workers are known to the community as people who are not, using the street language, they are not snitches. Telling your agency that a shooting could have been prevented had other things occurred, that's the interruption of the violence. They interrupt the violence, but they are not mandated to report these conversations, behaviors, knowledge, et cetera, to the local police. Number five, again, if you're on the computer, you can go to cureviolence.org, and we are discussing a community-based model. Many of you have heard change NRA policy. Many of you have heard get to your legislators. And I'm offering this for people who could do something now and look at their communities and say, how can we solve the problem from within? So here's number five, and these are, again, these are the components you have to have in order to be adherent to the model. Provide training and technical assistance to workers, program managers, and implementing agencies covering the necessary skills to implement the model correctly, and that is what's required to achieve the expected decrease in violence. So the workers are trained, of course, and the leading part of the bullets underneath, the Cure Violence Technical Assistance staff will provide a toolkit with the essential materials for implementing the Cure Violence model. If you're online, go to cureviolence.org and type in five required criteria, and you will see what is available. So the another amplification in one of the bullets underneath, number five, is the Cure Violence Technical Assistance staff will work closely with the site. Again, I'm reading the bullet verbatim, including weekly phone calls and quarterly site visits and assessments, and provide regular management and worker booster training. So there's something also here where they can look and see. The model's flexible. If they realize that some of their strategies are not producing the reduction in shootings that they want, this model is flexible enough. Compare that to how long do you have to wait for Congress to be in session? How long does it take for a bill to be passed? Do you have to go out here and raise 20,000 signatures? This type of thing. So we're interrupting violence in this model, the Cure Violence model. So I want to read all five of them again, and then talk a little bit about the successes. So the Cure Violence Health model is an epidemic model, and I'm not saying it's an epidemic control, because violence is an epidemic. We've all agreed that this is a societal disease. There are five core components, and they are: detect potentially violent events, provide ongoing behavior change and support to the highest risk individuals, change community norms that allow, encourage, and exacerbate violence. I'm reading from the site, recapping all five, continuing analyzing data to ensure proper implementation. I broke that down to you so it doesn't sound too technical, as well as number five, providing training and technical assistance to workers, program managers, and implementing agency covering the necessary skills to implement the model correctly. So the Cure Violence model has been very successful in Chicago, It's been successful in Baltimore and New York City. So how are behaviors changed? That's one thing you mentioned, curing the violence, the idea that violence is normal. How do they get people to change their behavior? That might be something that some of you are wondering. So in order to change behavior, the workers, they want to, because they're monitoring behavior of individuals, they want to establish trust with the community and the people they are working. So mentioned earlier is that workers are going to do an assessment. They're going to find out what people need. Do they need help with drugs? Do they need help with education? Do they need help with depression? And they can make referrals. They can make referrals to other partners. So workers are also, and I'm going to read this little paragraph, workers are also trained in methods of persuasion, alternatives to violence, detection and diagnosis of violence behavior, appropriate referrals for client issues. So I mentioned that earlier. This is a certification you get as a specific type of outreach worker. So you have identified the people at risk. You're finding out this whole component of the human being. What is the person angry about? What is the person lacking? And then they make the referrals, and they also begin to discuss with them alternatives to the violence is the language used here. Lisa Rose Rodriguez uses the word in her LinkedIn article, interpersonal conflict. So now we're moving on to changing group and community behavior. So I'm reading from the site. One of the most important factors of whether someone commits violence is what we think our peers expect us to do. Again, these are kind of veiled language for crews and gangbangers. So some of the language that people react to is somebody was messing with them, someone was disrespecting them. So what these outreachers do in the CureViolence.org program is that they explain to the people they have identified how they can get out of these adversarial conflicts without using violence as a solution. So they're training them how not to use violence as a solution. And once again, we're calling that, they're calling it violence interruption. So here is some of the data that is available on how these programs have cut the violence down. So you've been listening to Black Talk Radio. The show is Victims to Victorious. My name is Angel Fall. We're discussing the CureViolence.org program in Chicago. And we hopefully will get to New York and Baltimore as well. So here are some of the statistics. So I do have a little bit of a caveat here, and that is in 2015, the Cure Violence Program, which is also known as Ceasefire Chicago, they lost some of their funding, and they got it restored. So in the space where they lost their funding and it was restored in 2015 to 2016, naturally killings increased, unfortunately. And but let's talk about the successes that they had. So starting in 2012, there was a long-term downward trend to shootings and killings during that can be attributed to the Cure Violence Program. So in Chicago, March 2015, when the program was implemented, a ceasefire was operating in 20% of the violent communities. And between 2013 and 2015, there were 536 fewer shootings. Now, I mentioned that the funding was cut in 2015 and then restored later on in 2016, 2017. When the funding was cut over the next 18 months, 816 additional people were shot. I'm going to say that again. So once the program lost funding in 2015, and they were out without funding for approximately 18 months, my understanding of funding came from the Department of Justice. the number of shootings went up to 816. When the shootings had gone down and there were 536 fewer shootings than normal, they had 71 outreach workers. When the shootings went up to 816, they had only 10 workers. People who do research call this a direct relationship. So it is a direct relationship between the number of workers, 74, and the number of shootings that decreased. When workers were cut by 64 individuals, 74 minus 10 is 64, okay, the incidents went up to over 816 people. So murders in Chicago go down every time pure violence, it's also known as Chicago's ceasefire, is increased. And murders go up every time pure violence is cut. So it is a trend that has been measured over time. And this is important. If you are a grassroots person and you are living in a city that doesn't have a cure violence type program that looks at community solutions based on individual behavior changes, then you might want to go to cureviolence.org and take a look at what they're doing and the kind of results they have gotten. If you just tuned in, I'm Angel Falk, and this is Black Talk Radio. The name of this show is Victims to Victorious. Victims to Victorious, and we take a look at the solutions of gun violence reduction based on public health models. So some of there are personal success stories, of course. There are partners. There are people, other organizations who have found this helpful. And we began with discussing the model in Chicago, Illinois. If you just tuned in, this is Angel Fall. Victims to Victorious. We were previously discussing the Chicago Ceasefire Project, which was born out of the CureViolence.org project. So they were so successful in Chicago that stakeholders in New York City, particularly Brooklyn, decided to try the same thing. So now we're going to look at how the project was applied and implemented in New York City. So in 2008, and I am actually referencing the publication, Testing a Public Health Approach to Gun Violence, an Evaluation of Crown Heights, Save Our Streets. And they even say in the title of the publication that it is a replication of the Cure Violence model. So for those of you who are just familiarizing yourselves with public health models, one of the things about any experiment or any cure is that it has to be replicatable. That sounds like a big word, but you can hear the word repeat or replication in that, So it has to be replicatable. You actually do know this if you've ever had any experience with disease and you take a medicine or you go to rehab for your broken leg. The exercises that the physical therapy gives to each person with a broken leg can vary, but the exercise model for rehabilitating broken bones is applied to each person because it's replicatable. If you change physical therapists, you might have you lift less weight or walk fewer steps, but the model is pretty much what we also call generalizable when we're looking at research models. So we're a little more than halfway into the show, and we're looking at community-based interventions. So in 2008, and I'm reading from the publication, you can find it if you're online at courtinnovation.org. In 2008, using a quasi-experimental comparison neighborhood design, researchers with Northwestern University found that the original Chicago Ceasefire Project had a statistically significant impact on the incidence and density of gun violence in 3 to 5 intervention neighborhoods. That's wonderful epidemiological speak. I'm going to clarify it for you. So the people in Northwestern are bragging on their program, saying that they're getting really good results on the number of gunshots. When they say density, they're looking at kind of clusters in certain neighborhoods. And so it caught the eye of people in New York City. So the SOS project was implemented. This is what the people in New York called the Chicago ceasefire model at first. So it was implemented by the Crown Heights Community Mediation Center. The planning process began in 2009, and by early 2010, they were mobilized. The community outreach people were mobilized. So it is data-driven, meaning they are counting gunshots. They are counting gunshot wounds. They are, my understanding, they're counting visits to the ER even. So the outreach began in 2010, and in New York City, in Crown Heights, they have a little bit more of a diverse population. You see more Latinos represented, and also on the East Coast, within the Black or African American statistics, West Indian people are also counted, and they become a subgroup of African Americans. So in the 29-month study, they decided that most of their population had a percentage of risk for being shot. They decided, researchers decided that 68% of them had a risk of, a high risk of being shot. 18% had a medium risk of being shot. And the highest age group for being shot is unfortunately as young as 15, and it goes up by 11 years. So they were looking at age 15 to 26. So I'm going to expand a little bit more on the violence interruption definition that we spoke about earlier. These are credible messengers who are literally interrupting the violence. So they are keeping people from committing a shooting. So reading from the publication, violence interruption. Outreach workers also working as violence interrupters by identifying and mediating street conflicts that were likely to erupt in gun violence. The staff reported, this is in New York City Crown Heights, more than 100 potentially violent street conflicts involving more than 1,000 individuals over the 29-month study period. So what we're looking at is the ability for a human being to have contact with another human being and help change a behavior that would otherwise have resulted, okay, otherwise have resulted in gun death. So reading from the publication again, if you just tuned in, we have, we are discussing the Cure Violence Project in Crown Heights, New York. The article that's online for you to follow or download when the show is over, Testing a Public Health Approach to Gun Violence. I'm Angel Fall, and this is Victims to Victorious, and we focus on how public health models can be used to change the gun violence norms. If you want to know more about the publication I'm reading from, Sarah Pritchard, F-R-I-T-S-H-E, was the Principal Research Associate, Center for Court Innovation. You can email her if you can't get a good PDF file link. You can email her, S like Sam, F like Frank, R-I-T-S-C-H at court.state.ny.us. I'll read her email again, S like Sam, F like Frank, R-I-T-S-C-H at court.state.ny.us. You can also send me a direct message if you didn't get all that on Air Angel on Twitter. What we're doing now is we're taking a look at the important reduction in crime and death and gunshot wounding that was implemented in New York City using the cure violence model. So changes in gun violence, the results show that the average monthly shooting rates in Crown Heights decreased by 6% from pre to the post period. And I'm reading that directly from the article. So what do they mean if you're listening by pre? They mean before the intervention and after the intervention. So at first, of course, they didn't think that that was so significant. Now, but they have other measurements as well. So one of the impacts on community norms regarding gun violence, and I didn't expand much on that when talking about Chicago, is how do you get people who've normalized violence to realize that they don't have to live with it and they can change it? So one of the things that the outreach workers do is they create community events. They measure them, they count the number of contacts with participants, et cetera. So the SAVE, the SOS, which is the acronym used in New York City for cure violence, they organize 43 community events. And they believe that they attracted 6,000 people altogether. So that's a lot of contact with the community. Contrast to how does the NRA make personal contact with communities in urban areas? How does the NRA create a fellowship, if you will, with Black and Brown communities in these cities wrecked by violence? Something to think about. If you're following me online, go to courtinnovation.org. We are taking a look at the violence project in New York City, Crown Heights. It's a replication of the cure violence model in Chicago. And of course, you still have to have all the same components that we mentioned earlier. Now, one of the things that they explain and spend a lot of time with is learning, showing how, having outreach workers showing people how to mitigate conflict. This is a core part of actually interrupting the violence. So when they look back, and there's actually a word called retrospective case analysis, the implementation of the program resulted in very, very serious numbers of reducing gunshot violence and gunshot wounds in these areas. So what we're looking at is when people from the communities are engaged, when people in the communities are engaged, you see less gun violence. So how can you, if you're listening to this, how can you implement this in your own program? Follow me on Twitter. Go to cureviolence.org. So, and understand that if you participate, you have to have the five components that we mentioned earlier. So the kind of results that they got in New York City, just they're measuring each thing. So each of the five components that I mentioned, you can create a measurement. So one of the things that's really fascinating is that they have measured the number of conflicts that they have completely resolved, and they average 60%. So from that 60% of conflicts that they resolved, their language is they have stopped someone from being shot 60% of the time based on their outreach, 60% of the time. So this is a model that can be implemented in other cities. So there are other cities besides New York and Chicago. Boston also had a ceasefire project that was very similar, very, very similar. The heart of the Chicago ceasefire project that we talked about earlier is using the credible messenger. And here we see the credible messengers in New York City. They're also outreach workers, and they're most likely to look like the people in the neighborhood. Now, remember, in Crown Heights, they have a larger Hispanic population than they did in the target area of Chicago. Most people that they identified who were at risk had a high risk of being shot, and they were from ages 15 to 26. That was the age range. Of all the conflicts that they believed were identifiable, they solved over 60% that they determined were completely resolved. The next set of data that they present says that 30% of the conflicts were temporarily resolved. Now, at the top of the show, I mentioned an online article by Lisa Rose Rodriguez, an epidemiologist. And in that article, she talked about interpersonal violence. And that is what these researchers are calling, conflict resolution. So those are really two words that we're using interchangeably. So some more data from the Crown Heights Project let me also explain that because they were so good at reducing shooting incidents, the project began to spread to other parts of East New York. Crown Heights is where they started, East Flatbush, for our listeners in that area who know where these boroughs are, Brownsville, Bedford-Stuyvesant, et cetera. So it was generalizable and to adjacent areas. I mentioned that earlier. Can your model be duplicated? That's very important for public health resolution. So one other part of the model that they use in New York that I haven't spoken about is public education. They wanted to educate people regarding gun violence, and they wanted to enlist the help of merchants and other people who own businesses and other stakeholders in helping to hand out the literature about the impact of gun violence. So they developed a survey, and again, in their model in New York City, it's far more diverse. In other words, I want the listeners to realize that when we're talking about Chicago, we're mostly talking about African-American people. But in these neighborhoods in New York that are adjacent to Bed-Stuy and to Crown Heights, you have Black African-Americans. They count West Indians separately, Latinos, Asian and Pacific Islanders, and some white people. So that's significant because here we have developed a model that says people are at risk in a certain neighborhood, not just based on race, not just based on race. So one of the questions that they asked in doing their work is, do you believe, they asked the participants in these neighborhoods, do you believe that our program will work? And they get an overwhelming yes. They get about 55% of the people who believe that it will work. The other thing that they measured is shifts in norms regarding gun violence. So the survey that they passed out allows people to express what they think about being strapped. I'm using the street language. So here's the actual question from the survey. In this neighborhood, is it sometimes necessary for people to carry a gun to protect themselves or their family? And in this neighborhood, is it sometimes necessary for people to join a gang to protect themselves or their family? Early on when I was discussing the Chicago model, I felt that some of the language was veiled in terms of saying that they were gangs. Here in this report that you can find on courtinnovation.org, they actually use the language of gang. So we're reading from Testing a Public Health Approach to Gun Violence. I'm Angel Fall. We're actually looking at programs that have been implemented in communities. We started out with Chicago, and now we're looking at the Ceasefire Project in New York City, which is also named SOS, and they were successful in measuring attitudes about gun violence, which speaks to the norm of expecting to be strapped, expecting to be shot, expecting to have to protect yourself from someone else. These things that have become part of the urban culture. And for those of you who are listening carefully, I've also pointed out that the community in Crown Heights, for instance, where they start, has more of a diverse ethnic population than the community in Chicago where the ceasefire project started and the model that they are duplicating. So in the time that we have, I want to mention that there was a Boston ceasefire project. The Boston ceasefire project got very good numbers early on, but the data and the project did fall apart for a variety of reasons, and we don't have time to talk about them here. Baltimore also had a project, and I had mentioned that one of the researchers there was Dr. Shani Bubbs and other people from Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. So the first data on the Boston ceasefire model, again, it has to be a community-based. It has to have the five components that we mentioned. It showed a drastic decrease of 63% in gun homicides among young people. And we used the epidemiological language early on, quasi-experimental design, et cetera. So they used the same methodology, and they got this tremendous result of a decrease in 63% of gun homicides among young people in that year. And one of the things that people might be interested in is that the cost of gun violence is more, it's very costly in the healthcare system, and then it's costly also for the ramifications. People who have been shot, people who are seeking physical therapy, people who are getting time off work. These are all things that impact gun violence. So in the Boston neighborhood, gunshots to young people were greatly reduced by 63%. So the average cost of a emergency room visit is approximately $21,000 for someone who has been shot. We have a few more minutes here. I want to thank you for listening to Victims to Victorious. I'm Angel Fall, and we're discussing a community-based model. If you are a grassroots person, if you are someone who has been shot or concerned about your neighborhood, I want you to get online and look to see how people have been getting results using these community-based models. Most of them are called Cure Violence. Some of them have alternative names like SOS Program. That's the one in New York. Ceasefire Chicago. If you want to know more about this, you can also follow me on Twitter on Air Angel. So mediating conflict is definitely a way for people to develop a skill that reduces their wanting to solve the dispute with a gun and their believing that there are other alternatives. So that is a very important component about this. Community mobilization campaigns with outreach, programs, learning, getting to know your community, developing trust in your community. Those are all part of the program. So in listening to this, if you are someone who really wants to get involved, this methodology can be applied. The original studies were funded by the Department of Justice, but you have to have the model intact, the first five components, but if I were a community grassroots person, I would educate myself on how the project works. I would educate myself on how you get trained, how you become a violence interrupter. So we've learned some new language here in this this discussion on the public health solutions to gun violence. The current programs in New York City are actually still going on. There is a woman, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing her name right, Shayna Delgado. She is on Twitter, and she can be reached about concerning Cure Violence New York, Cure Violence New York. And I'm going to read, we have a few minutes left. I do want listeners who have had experiences with gun violence to hear some of the field interview questions. First of all, they asked the participants if they live in Crown Heights. If you were listening the beginning of the discussion on the New York piece, it starts out with the people who live in Crown Heights, New York. How long have you lived here? What is the closest street intersection to your house? They asked for demographics. They're very simple, male, female. They don't have transgender. How old are you? They asked you to self-describe your race, but they have a list. Again, they count African, American, and West Indian separately. Then they asked neighborhood violence questions. In terms of street violence, fights or confrontations that happen outside or in the streets, how do you think Crown Heights compares to other neighborhoods in Brooklyn? If you want to know where you're going, you have to know where you are. And that seems like a very simple no-brainer. But the attitude of understanding that violence isn't normal is what the researchers are trying to get to here. In the last year, I'm reading question number two in the survey, in the last year, have you ever heard gunshots in your neighborhood? The next question, how common would you say is it for people to belong to street gangs in the neighborhood? When answering that question, again, the researchers and the outreach workers are trying to get at the fact that they don't want you to believe that's normal. Most people don't live that way. So this is one of the tools that the field interviewers have. I'm going to skip down the time we have limited. Have you ever seen someone shot with a gun in the neighborhood? That's a simple yes or no answer. Then this question speaks to the mediation piece or the interpersonal conflict piece that epidemiologist Lisa Rose Rodriguez mentions in her article on LinkedIn. If a fight were to break out near your home, how likely is it that your neighbors would break it up? So those are just some of the questions. You can visit that publication yourself. It's put out Center for Court Innovation, and it is titled Testing a Public Health Approach to Gun Violence, and it begins with the New York neighborhood of Crown Heights. If you have more questions for me, my name is Angel Fogg. You can follow me on Twitter. Today we took a look at the Cure Violence model, which has been successful in Chicago, Boston, Baltimore, and New York City. We did an in-depth look of the Cure Violence model in Chicago and New York City. There are five required components of Cure Violence. We went over them at the top of the show. If you are interested in starting this, you should contact them. You can go to cureviolence.org. And in order for your model to be successful, you must implement all five components of the model. My name is Angel Fall, and this has been Victims to Victorious.